Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Do have some hopes for this new administration that they really get things done. It seems like they're, you know, interested in that with all the, you know, the efforts on DOGE in particular. But education is something that has been important to me. And what happened to kids in this country in the aftermath of COVID is just revolting, candidly. And there was a piece that I read on Real Clear Politics yesterday by a professor at the University of Houston. And I like the way that he started the piece. And he's going to join me here in a second. But he said, imagine these words as the first speech delivered by the incoming Secretary of Education, who now we know would be Linda McMahon. Today, I'm here to deliver bitter medicine. American education has failed. Teachers and parents, administrators and government, and even students all bear some responsibility. I think there's a lot of truth to that. We're going to explore a little further with Professor Adam Ellwanger, who's with us this afternoon. Professor, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on here. I have an indirect Houston connection. I was just there a few weeks ago visiting my first grandson. My son lives in the Heights. Go to this restaurant called Squabble. It's outstanding. He works there. Really good restaurant. Invoice
well,
me. You can invoice me if you go there.
How's that sound?
Well, thank you very much. Look, education, this is such a big topic. I hope at some point we do a little bit better autopsy on what happened during COVID and the learning loss and some of these things that have happened to these kids. I feel sick about it. I've got a little girl who's in fourth grade, and I think she's doing pretty well right now, but not all the kids across this country are. But your message, I think, is extremely well taken, and you do need some changes in education. I don't know if we'll get them, but I want you to get into a little bit more detail about your recommendations, what your hopes are here.
Sure. I think that the pandemic, like you said, stripped a lot of this bare, but I think that it goes back probably for the majority of yours in my lifetime, the roots of the decline of American education. There's a lot that's happened, like the disintegration of the American family, that have contributed to this. And there's a cumulative effect. As the schools have gotten worse at imparting the necessary knowledge to maintain our society to the students, those students in turn have become less and less prepared to teach if they choose to pursue education as a career. So as time goes by, this problem has been compounded. And I really do think at this point, just from my position as a college professor, I could see it in the incoming students to college. They are not at the level of preparation or anywhere near where they were, say, 20 years ago. And the pandemic has definitely made it worse.
So, you know, you get into some of these big issues, even what I refer to with DOGE and trying to strip down bureaucracy and all this. It's so, so huge. I think there's an inability to even get started on how to solve some of this. So where would you start?
Well, that's a great question. And like you say, this is the sign that it's not going to be a quick fix, and it can't be a simple fix, because there's not one or two things wrong. Everything is wrong, top to bottom, K to 12, you know, college, the whole thing. A lot of people have responded to what I wrote saying, this is just another national solution. All you're doing is using the power of the federal government to suggest some radical changes. But the problem is federal government's involvement itself. That may be true, but even in the best case scenario, if Trump decides to nix the Department of Education, that will not be something that happens overnight. And even if it did, there would be a large sort of vacuum in terms of what local school districts would do in the wake of that.
Right.
So at least for some time, we're going to need to work within the existing mechanisms to enforce a major change at all levels. And I don't think that there's one thing you begin with. I think that there's four or five things that you pursue simultaneously that would have an immediate effect on education.
So I certainly understand a desire to get rid of a big federal bureaucracy like the Department of Education. I tend to live in reality, and I don't think it's realistic to think that we're going to, as a Congress, get rid of the Department of Education. So I'm more in line with what you're thinking here, because if we kind of assume that that's not going away, let's try to make some changes anyway and focus on things that really matter. But one of the tough things about this, and you mentioned this, Professor, a couple of minutes ago, you wrote about this, the rise of single-parent households, less common among affluent families, has been catastrophic. When you only have one adult in the home, they're working 50 to 60 hours a week, and I don't even work close to that, but I'll tell you, you get home at night, your daughter has homework, you want to chill, you don't give them the attention that they deserve, so that accumulates as well. So some of these problems are societal, and I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah, I mean, I this is why I think it's got to be a multi-pronged approach. In the article, I say that we need an academic Sputnik. Sputnik, of course, was the real engine of the United States entering the space race in the middle of the Cold War. And we saw what we can do when we really devote a singular focus to success. Some of the things I think that we could do in the immediate sense is end summer vacation. Summer vacation, I know this won't be popular with the kids, but summer vacation is a relic of a time gone by. And in the aftermath of the pandemic, where we have this enormous learning loss, we simply don't have 3 or 4 months a year to sacrifice to kids playing at the beach or playing video games.
By the way, along those lines, I'm just going to go home tonight. When I get home, I'm going to tell my daughter that Trump decided to end summer vacations. I'm going to get that on video and just see what her reaction is. But I understand your point. But again, a lot of these things, you know, they're just so big. You talk about other things like creating a curricula, prioritizing history, civics, and an understanding of our government. Here's one that would be a favorite with my audience. We'll eliminate curricula that divide Americans by race, class, religion, sex, or sexual identity. But on a nationwide basis, when you have an effort to, let's just say, in the real world right now, deport migrants who are criminals, and a mayor of Denver that's saying, hey, we're going to get our own local law enforcement together to fight that. It's hard for me to believe there's going to be a lot of people in the educational world on the left that are going to lay down and say, you know what, you guys are right. We're going to allow this to happen. So I bring that up because this is just going to be a battle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, you bring up the issue of illegal immigration, and this has become a huge issue in our schools, especially in urban areas.
Houston especially,
40 years ago.
Right?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. In Houston.
Yeah.
40 years ago, schools could assume that the vast majority of students were competent in English. This just isn't the case anymore. You know, serious learning cannot occur when a teacher is trying to satisfy a room full of students who speak five different languages. I think the takeaway here, and we could debate the merits of having a multicultural society, but if we're going to, right, that makes a common language and a common culture all the more important.
Absolutely.
You can't have a multicultural society and say, but keep your language, keep your way of life, right?
Assimilation becomes a bad word. Why is assimilation a bad word? It shouldn't be.
It certainly shouldn't be. And especially if we still believe in the principle out of many one, you know, which is foundational principle of the United States, a huge part of that is language. And just once again, creating incentives for newcomers to learn the language would have a radical effect in education, you know, especially in the lower levels, K through 12.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
There are just so many big challenges, and I think your ideas are awesome. That's why I invited you to come on the show. I hope that we pursue at least some of these in the next couple of years, because I think a lot of us have waited for changes, and there needs to be at least a dialogue. And again, this is where I've fallen in the last few weeks here, Professor, just so you know, because this show is a pretty big critic of the legacy media and what they've provided the American people. And again, this is one of those things, even with the learning loss in the aftermath of COVID, there's no real journalism that's looking at some of these things. So unfortunately, the ideas don't get shared. We don't have a national dialogue, and that makes things even worse. So I have some concerns about that. Let me share one quick story with you, because I think leadership is important as well. There's a woman that I got to know very well years ago here in St. Louis. Her name is Tiffany Anderson, and she was charged with running an area here in the St. Louis area, Jennings School District. It's in North St. Louis County, very African-American, a poor district. And she came in doing things that certainly I'd never seen before, and other educators may have not seen. She stood on the street corner every morning when these kids were coming to class, and she'd see some of these kids carrying pillows because they didn't even sleep on a bed. She'd meet the parents. She'd really get to know them. She put a washing machine and a dryer in the school, and she said, "Parents, you're welcome to use this, but here's the trade-off. You got to do a little volunteer work here, you know, at the school." And parents took advantage of that. She's in the Wichita School District right now. She was hired away, but her style of leadership, and by the way, she wasn't asked for more money because, you know, there was only so much money, but she was doing it not by sitting in meetings. She was actually trying to work with the kids and look at ideas to educate kids. And we don't have enough of that, it seems.
Yeah, that's awesome, that sort of initiative. And we really need to take it back to blueprint here, if for no other reason than the fact that the Americans who are most harmed by our failures in education are the working class and the middle class Americans. The upper class Americans can buy their way out of a failing system, right? But if we really want to fulfill the promise of class mobility, if we want to fulfill to Americans the idea that your children might be better off than you, right now it's the people who want mobility that are really suffering as a result of this education system that simply doesn't allow it. So I think we owe it to especially the new voters who voted for Trump, especially the ones who come from demographic backgrounds that are not traditionally Republicans, to show that we're serious and recognize that education has to be reformed for no other reason than the fact that it is the lower end of the income spectrum that's getting most hurt.
Right. I can break it down very simply this way. You know, and you can see this in the aftermath of the election in the polling. We spend, and the LA Times and our paper here, and I bet it the Houston Chronicle, so much time on climate change, so much time on climate change, to which there are very few solutions. This is something that is a crisis right now in this country, and there are ways to fix it, at least improve upon it, and we don't have the amount of time and effort that's spent on that, which is unfortunate. But Professor, thank you for shining some light on this, and I really appreciate you coming on here. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for the invite.
All right. Take care.